old section, you know, about making pledges, right? Right. Okay. Tana Rabba. All right. Now another interpretation. Motza Sefosecha. Torah says whatever you utter from your lips, the rest of the words are Tishmor V'Yosisa. It should have been quoted, but they didn't quote it. Okay. You have to watch and do. But the reason why they don't quote it is because we'll see in a second that they take Tishmor in a different sense. Okay. Okay, so Moses Fosecha, they say, you know what? There is, in this particular statement, Zu Mitzvah Sase. This is an affirmative command. Namely, you pledge, you keep your pledge. Okay? Okay. Tishmar, that next word, Zu Mitzvah Sase. It means also that if you give your pledge, then you're also violating a negative commandment if you fail to give it. Okay, so that therefore we see already that when you make a promise to give and you fail to give, right, you are not only violating a negative commandment, but you're also violating an affirmative commandment. There are two of them involved. Okay, so it's two mitzvahs that you're violating. Okay, and then the next word over there is v'osiso, right? Tishmor v'osiso, you shall do. So he says, what is v'osiso? He says, ashora, this is a warning, the bezdin, for the court, sheyasucha, that they can compel you to fulfill what you pledged. Kasher no darto, all right, even as you have made a vow, right? So he says, ze neder, right? Then the next words are, l'adashem alekecha, to the Lord your God, namely, you have vowed what? Like elo chatois, right? Chatos, or ashomos, or noshom, or olos, or shlomim, right? And it's written, kasher no l'adashem alekecha, nidova. This is what the pasuk says, okay? So now the question is, what's nedava? So he says, kamashma ov, right? That means exactly what it is, a nedava. Asher dibarto, and which you have said, this says, elu koche benek habayis. In other words, this also applies to not sacrifices, but other commitments that you made to the general temple, to the general Beis HaMikdash fund, right? We've already described, you know, for example, Arochim, Haromim, right, where you pledge, let's say, you know, my value, or the value of this, or that, and so on, you know, I pledge. So if you make such a pledge, you have to fulfill it, okay? So it applies to that. Beficha, and what is Beficha, which is the last word in the pasuk, it says, Zu Tzedakah. Also, in the case of tzedakah, don't delay to give tzedakah. Okay?
That's if you pledge it.
Right. You pledge tzedakah, you have to give. Omar, one of the sages said, Motzos Pasecho, right? Zu mitzvahs ase. This we translate as being an affirmative commandment, lomali. What do I need that pasuk for? I could have derived the same idea that there's a positive commandment in another pasuk. And what is that other pasuk? Me uvasa shoma v'abesem shoma. Again, in Asir Tasa, we'll be reading it this week. It's written over there, uvasa shoma, you will go there to where? To the Beis HaMikdash, right? V'abesem shoma, and there you will bring, you know, olosechem, zivchechem, etc., etc. Bring them, you know, whatever you pledge. So why do I need two psukim in order to teach us that it is an affirmative commandment to keep your word? Okay? That's what the question is. So, nafka tishmor, what does it do? Right, so it says tishmor, how about that? It says zu mitzvahs leisaseh, lomali. So what do I need a pasuk to tell me that? Because we already have another pasuk. What is the other pasuk? It's written, Melos ha'achel l'shalmo rafke, right? That's derived from, the first Melos ha'achel l'shalmo. So what do we need it? And you said also before the seesaw, this is atzhora levesdin sheyasucha lomoli. Why do we need that? Mikra voso, in other words, make him to make a sacrifice nafka. The Tanya, as we've learned, Yakriv Oso, in other words, he is to offer it, you know, as a sacrifice. Malamed Shekofin Oso. We learn from this pasuk that it is possible if a person fails to fulfill the pledge of bringing a sacrifice that he made, then he can be compelled, right? And we say, Yochel Baal Korcho? You mean to say he can be compelled even against his will? Talmud Loma. This is why the pasuk says what? Lirtzono, which means by his own will. So how do you figure that one out? So the answer is, oh, Ketzad, how do you work that one out? So he says, Kofinoso Achayuma Rotza Oni. You put pressure on him until he says, yeah, I'm willing.
What was the size of the Bet HaDin that decided this? Three judges?
Three judges in general, right. Yeah, that's the general one, because this is not the kind of a thing that would go to a Sanhedrin, you see. Even the Sanhedrin Ketana, remember that Sanhedrin Ketana consists of a court of 23 judges, okay? And the Sanhedrin Gedola, of course, consists of the court of 71 judges. And Sanhedrin Gedola was in Yerushalayim, and the Sanhedrin Ketana theoretically could be in various areas. But it all depended, you know, upon what is the nature of the dispute that they had to deal with, okay? But the ordinary Besdin consists of three judges.
Local court.
Yeah, normally it's the local court, right. Unless, you know, it's impossible to determine at the local level what it is, on that case you can bring it to a higher court, okay? And then there were certain specified actions which required actually the Sanhedrin itself, the Sanhedrin Gedola. Well, first of all, Sanhedrin Ketana. What is Sanhedrin Ketana? They dealt with primarily with dinei nefashos. Okay? In other words, if it involved capital punishment as a possibility, then in that case it was up, you had to have already a Sanhedrin Ketana. In other words, a court of 23 judges in order to determine that. Okay? Then, if let's say there was a dispute among the various Shvatim, or if it was a question of having to declare war, or if it's a question of, for example, increasing the amount of land that will be hallowed as, you know, for Yerushalayim, the borders of it, or increasing the boundaries of the Beis HaMikdash, well, other than that, the Gemara says that is in the province of Sanhedrin Gedola. So they had their specified functions, but again, the average person was normally that of three, okay? We also have mention of special Batei Din. We have, for example, a mention in Talmud someplace of a Bezdin Shel Kohanim, okay, where it was their job to supervise, to see, you know, that the Kohanim fulfilled their functions, if there was any violations, then in that particular case they were in charge of the...
They
took care of their own in that case, right. So you could have, you know, sometimes a special Bezdin or something like that. There could be a special Bezdin convened, let's say, as we'll learn later on when we come to the whole question about how do you determine, you know, when it's an Ibrior, when it's, leap year or something like that, you know, you need a campaign. So there you had a Bezdin, a special Bezdin, that was reserved for them. You know, they had to be experts. They had to know what to do. You simply couldn't pick up somebody from the street and make him into a member of the Bezdin. All right. So at any rate, we see the question is over here. Why do we need two Pesukim for each of these particular cases? So the answer is, well, because maybe we're dealing with different cases. For example, Let's see. Tzedakah Mamar, yes. You're right, right. All right. So he says, Chad de Omar velo Afrish. He says, because sometimes they have the following case. A man says, okay, I'm going to give a sacrifice, okay? But what? Velo Ifrish. However, he didn't set aside the animal for the sacrifice. Or, in another case, Chad Ifrish, a man may have set aside an animal, and then guess what? Velo Akriv. But he didn't offer it as a sacrifice. He said, okay, this animal will be a sacrifice, and then never bothered to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. Right, never bothered. But Tzricha, so therefore we need these different interpretations. Why? The I'ash me'inon, if we say, for example, Omar velo Afrish, velo Ifrish, I should say, right, that, you know, he said that he would give, but at the same time he never set aside the animal. So we say, Mishum delo kiyamele dibure, right? The reason why we may have to use compulsion, let's say, would be what? Because he did not fulfill what he had to say. He promised to give, so we want him to come across and do it, right? So we can apply some compulsion until he says, okay. Aval Ifrish, but he set it aside for lo Ikriv, and he didn't sacrifice it. Eimor, we might say, Kol Heicha de Isay, Begozad Rachmona Isay, as long as, you know, the animal is still there, in reality, it is dedicated, belongs to the Rebbeinu Shalom. Okay? So, he's taking his time in fulfilling his pledge, but the pledge, theoretically, is available, right? So, Tzricha, therefore, we learn that you still have to apply either a little compulsion, or at least you have to apply the rule that don't delay in fulfilling your obligation. You have an obligation, fulfill it. Now, the Iyash Minin, and if we say as follows, Ifrish velo Hikriv, right, that he set aside an animal, but at the same time he didn't sacrifice it, Dekah Mashile Gabe, he's holding it to himself, right, he still has it in his own, he hasn't given it, Avol Omar velo Ifrish, but if the man said that he wants to give a sacrifice and he didn't set aside something, Amo, we might say as follows, Dibura lo klumu, words don't mean anything. So Tzricha, therefore we need the pasuk in order to teach us that words do mean something, and that if you make a pledge, you have to fulfill that pledge. Okay. So the Gemara now asks, Umi matzis amrit, so can you say the Omar for the Ifrish, that, you know, he says that he, you know, he wants to give a sacrifice, but he didn't set aside anything, right? He says, how does that square with the fact that in the Pasuk, right, they're talking about the whole Nedova Ksiva? It's written over there, right, the word Nedova. Utanan, and we have learned, and this, of course, we have explained previously, a zehu neder. What do we mean by the word neder? It means omer hare olai olo. Man says, I obligate myself to bring an olo. The ezuhi nedova. But what is a nedova? Ha omer, a person says, hare zu olo. He says, this animal is destined to be an olo, right? It's set aside to be an olo. Ma be neder. Linadova, and what is the difference between the neder and the dover? So he says, neder meis on nignav, let's say the animal that he pledges to give as a neder, when he says, you know, hare olai, I am obligated to do it, and let's say that the particular animal which he set aside either died, meis, right, or nignav, or was stolen, nevertheless, chayabach riyuso, he still has an obligation in order to bring the, you know, a sacrifice. So, obviously, you have to go out and get another animal, right? Buy another animal and make it. But, Nidava, in the case of Nidava, Mesa or Nignava, what if the animal where he said, this animal is going to be an owner. and then that animal died, or it was stolen, so Eino Chai B'Achri Yisur, then he doesn't have that obligation. So Omar Rava, so Rava says, Mashkachas Lo says, I can give you another case. He says, can go, for example, the Omar HaReolai Oilo, right? I take upon myself an obligation to give an Ola, Al Minas, but on condition, wise guy, Sheino Chai B'Achri Yisur. I'll give it, but I don't accept any responsibility in order to bring it. So in that particular case, right, in that particular case, what are we going to do with him? So you might apply, you know, some kind of moral pressure in order to try to get it to do it. But, you know, if he says that, no, you know, I take no responsibility for it, then you can't compel him to bring the animal. Because he said, I will not accept the responsibility of bringing the, okay, the wise guy. All right. Then the next word is beficha, right? And we said, you say it with your mouth. What does the pleasure make with the mouth? He says, zut tzedaka, right? This is tzedaka. This is how we interpret it. So Omar Rava, Rava said, ut tzedaka mechayev alon alter. He says, you know, with nedarim, Nedaves, in other words, animals that you pledge to give, right? So if you don't give it immediately, you still have a time, right? But he says, with tzedakah, you promised to give tzedakah, then in that case, the chayvel of the altar, you are immediately responsible in order to give it. My tamo. What is the reason? The reason is very simple. The poor need it. They're there, and therefore, if you make a pledge and you're going to give tzedakah, then in that case, fulfill it, because people need it in order to subsist, right?
That's why you say those words.
Right. Pshita, isn't this obvious? So the Gemara says, Mahu de tema, what if you would argue as follows? Kevon de minyona de kobenes kasiva, right? Inasmuch as the idea, you know, beficha and zut tzedakah, we say that this is tied in with the whole business of pledges on Monday. You have to bring the various korbanos that you pledged, right? So in that case, since there we said what? Are the ovri alor gibel regalim, right? Right? That just as we say that korbanos, you have three festivals time in order to fulfill it, right? So we would say that tzedakah too kikorbonos, in other words, that if you pledge charity, that you could drag it out for three festivals, right? Just as korbonos, so kamash malon, right? Therefore, we learn that it's not so. That korbonos and giving tzedakah, they're two different business, and tzedakah you should have to give immediately, okay? All right, I think I'm going to stop at this particular point, and we'll continue from this point over here next week. So we are now towards the bottom of Daf Vav Amud Aleph, and the Yitzhak Hashem will meet next week to continue from this particular point. Okay, very good. Okay. The argument continues, pointing out the difference between giving charity, giving tzedakah, as compared to fulfilling the pledges that you make to give, for example, the Dorim, the Dovis, in other words, animal sacrifices of one sort or another to bring, you know, to the Beis HaMikdash, or some of the others that we tied in together where we saw that in those cases you have actually three festivals until you violate the commandment which says that the Lo Sa'ach and Ashalma, that you should not delay in repaying it. But with charity, where there are a lot of poor people who need their help, so this rule, as we see, doesn't apply. And as the Gemara says, okay, hosam hu detalin hu rachmona b'regolim. In other words, in the case of the various sacrifices, this is where the Torah says that you have to, that you have the time given to fulfill, you know, repaying the pledge that you made over the course of festivals. three festivals is the accepted one, but as we saw, there are variations on that theme, right? Avol hocha, but here, in the case of charity, lo, absolutely not. Deho shechiche ani, because there are many, many poor people around, and if you delay them, if you delay giving your pledge to them, then in that particular case, how are they going to live? So therefore, charity doesn't fall into the same category. Omar Rava. Rava said as follows. Okay. He says, Kevin she'ovar alav regel echod over ba'aseh. Now, he puts a different slant upon what we've been talking about. We have, until this particular point, been talking about the fact that we have a law in the Torah. The law in the Torah says that if you make any kind of a pledge, right, kisidor nedel ha'shem lekecha, then in that case, what does it say? Lo se'acher neshamo. You should not delay in giving it. So, this is a negative command that you would be violating by delaying to make good the pledge that you made. But Rava says, there's not only a negative command as far as pledging is concerned, there is also an affirmative command as well, an asay. So, if you fail to bring the korban that you had pledged, even the first festival, then you're already, he says, in arrears as far as the fulfilling the affirmative commandment that says that you should go to the Beis HaMikdash and you should bring over there, right? To Vosa Shoma, as we read this past Shabbos, right? You go there. V'haveisem Shoma, Losechem, Zivcheichem, and Tavizbivcha, Nidrechem, etc., etc. In other words, and you are to bring over there all the pledges, the vows, everything that you made, bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, the very first yontif that that occurs. Don't delay that. So that's a different idea now, that not only is there a los aseh, but there's also an aseh, there's also an affirmative commandment to bring pledges, to give them. So basically, on this, they ask the following kasha upon Rava. Okay, it says, Hey Yid, Rabbi Yoshua, v'Rabbi Papayas, al v'lad shlomim sheyikorev shlomim. Okay, first of all, the minute that you see the word Hey Yid, you know that we're talking about a tractate in the Mishnah which we call Eduyos. Eduyos means literally testimonies, and the reason why it has that name is because it consists of a compilation of several chapters where hey it this one and hey it the other one, hey the one. Various rabbis came and they gave testimony about traditions that they had heard from their previous teachers. This is connected, of course, with the very dramatic event that we have in the Gemara Brachas about the time when Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua had their falling out, and Rabban Gamliel shamed Rabbi Yehoshua, and as a result, there was a revolt in the Sanhedrin, and they, in the yeshiva, you know, and the yeshiva in Yavda. And the result was that they deposed Rabban Gamliel, and then eventually they chose Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as the Nasi. But eventually peace was made between the two of them, and so Rabban Gamliel would officiate for 3 weeks, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would officiate the fourth week. Okay, this is the compromise that they worked out. But we read in Gemara Brachas that on the day when the rebellion against Rabban Gamliel took place in the academy, at that time they opened up wide the doors of the academy and said, whoever wants to come and learn Torah, let him come in. Because until that time, Rabban Gamliel had felt that the only people who should study Torah were people who were 100% tocho kivoro, as it says. In other words, inwardly and outwardly, that they were 100% committed. Anybody who was not committed, he felt, should not be privileged to enter into the academy, into the yeshiva, in order to learn. And they felt that everybody should have the opportunity to learn. So, at this particular point, this is when each rabbi who had traditions presented his tradition. So here we have a tradition. Following tradition was given by Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias. And what did they testify concerning? So they testified concerning the child or the offspring, okay, of an animal which was shlamim, that it should also be in turn be sacrificed as shlamim. All right, so let's define it. Obviously, what kind of animal are we talking about? We're talking about here either a female, a goat, right, or a female cow or a female sheep, okay? And you know, when it comes to shlamim, you can sacrifice female animals as well as male animals, whereas with certain other sacrifices, it's restricted either to one or to the other, depending upon what's the nature of the sacrifice, okay? But with shlamim, you can have. So, in this particular case, here was a cow, or a sheep, or a goat that was pregnant, okay? And then the owner of the animal had pledged, you know, that he would sacrifice this particular animal as shlamim, in other words, to have, you know, a festival together with the entire family, right, and to enjoy, and so on, as we already learned time and again concerning the nature of shlamim. So he made this pledge, right? Naturally, he didn't bring it immediately, because had he slaughtered the animal immediately, there wouldn't be anything to talk about, right? So instead, he waited for another yontif, let's say, to come and to bring the animal to shlamim. In the meantime, the offspring was born, right?
He knew that before.
Yeah, obviously, I guess he knew. I think that people who are used to raising animals know when an animal is pregnant, okay? Yeah, I mean, in general, they know about how long. Yeah, well, but in general, they were familiar with how long we have a gestation period, you know, from the time. And also, you know, with animals, they don't mate the way human beings mate, that every, seven times a week or something like that, you know. Instead, you know, there's a certain season in the year when they have a mating season, and the rest of the year, apparently, they're not interested very much in it, okay? So, therefore, they could sort of figure out, you know, that from the time that, the mating took place between the male and the female, when the offspring would be born. Okay. So, as I say, he did not bring in the very first festival, but instead he waited. And in the meantime, the animal had, the baby was born, right? So, the rule that they put down over here is that they testified that if the animal had been dedicated as shlamim, then its offspring too had to be sacrificed as shlamim. Okay? So now the question is, how much time? Okay?
Within the same sacrifice or?
As shlamim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Together with
the. No. You can't do it together. Oh, that would violate a different rule in the Torah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a rule in the Torah that speaks about. You know, also v'yespino los ishkatu b'yom echad. You know, this is what we read just as past Shabbos and Shul. You know, that no, we didn't read this past Shabbos. It's Pasha Emor. Okay, I take that back. We read it on Yontif. Okay, yeah, Pesach we read it last. But this is the din of also v'yespino. Also v'yespino means that you're not allowed to slaughter the animal together with its offspring at the same time. So obviously he could not slaughter them at the same time. Okay? Couldn't slaughter them at the same time. Of course, if you had a yontif that stretched out a long, long time, like Sukkos, you know, so maybe there's a possibility. But even so, because there's another law. And that law says that you cannot sacrifice an animal until it's 8 days old. Has to be 8 days old, okay? Not allowed to sacrifice it. So, why? Because maybe the animal would not be, as we would say, like bar kayama, which means that it would not be able to live on its own. Maybe it would perish before that and so on. And an animal to be sacrificed, as we said, that has to be tamim. It has to be perfect in every way, no blemish, whatever. And obviously, it has to be capable of being judged to be, a viable animal that's going to live, okay? So, therefore, they couldn't do it together. But the point is that another time, he would bring the offspring and sacrifice that, Ishlam, okay? So, Omar Rabba Pius, we're on the fourth line from the bottom, towards the end over there, Omar Rabba Pius said, Ani Meyid, I testify, Shehoi Salonu Poro Shazir Keshlonim, that we had a cow which was to be eaten as Shlomim, right, as a Shlomim sacrifice, V'achol Nuhu B'Pesach, and we ate it on Pesach, V'achalnu V'lodo Shlomim, and then we ate its offspring as Shlomim B'chag. Chag normally means what? No, Chag normally means Sukkos. Of course, we're talking about the terminology of the Talmud, okay? Did I hear a click? No. In the terminology of the Talmud, okay, when they speak about HaChag, the festival, they always use it to refer to Sukkos, okay? Whereas, what is the term that we normally use as far as Shavuos is concerned? The answer is Atzeres. Yeah, Atzeres. So, it's a little confusing, okay? Because the terminology is not the same as the terminology in the Torah. In the Torah, they're called, Chag HaMatzos, Chag HaShavuos, and Chag HaSukkos, right? Whereas, but the terminology of the Talmud, later on, this is the terms that they used to refer. So, therefore, this would mean then that they brought the offspring when? Sukkos, and they use it as a sacrifice at that time, right? They ate it then at that point. All right. So, the Gemara says as follows: Bishnamor bePesach lo akrivuhu. Right. Obviously, this blot, in other words, the offspring, could not have been sacrificed on Pesach. Why? It says because Amur, I would say, the Mechusa Zman Hava, that it was not yet old enough in order to be eaten, because as we said, you cannot eat at the same time, and also the animal has to be at least 8 days old before it can be eaten as a sacrifice. Okay. And by the way, the same thing still applies normally to animals, that you slaughtered, that the animal has to be at least 8 days old before you can do that. Okay. So. So in that case, the Gemara says, all right, good. Pesach, it wasn't eligible yet. Elav, Lada, Ba'atzeres, Echim, Ashino. So tell me, why didn't they sacrifice it on Shavuot? How come that they delayed, right, that long? When what did Rava say? Rava said that if you delay one festival, you're already violating the Asay, the affirmative command, which says that, and so on, that you have to go over there and rejoice before God. And he didn't do that because he waited for a festival or two festivals in order to do it. So, Omer Rav Zvid, Bishmei the Rava, so Rav Zvid said in the name of Rava, Kergon, and now we go to the next page. Example, he says, Shehoyo Chole Ba'atzeres. Maybe what happened was as follows, that the animal was sick on Shavuos. In other words, whatever it was not in a perfect state, and as we said before, if you're going to offer an animal to sacrifice, it has to be perfect, okay? So it was sick on Shavuos. And therefore, on that basis, then they waited already until what holiday in order to sacrifice the Shlom? The answer is they waited until Sukkot. Okay. Rav Ashi said as follows, my v'yachalnu v'lodo Shlomim b'chag, says, what is the meaning where it says, and we ate its offspring Shlomim on the festival, right? Literally. De katane chag hashvuos, right? Maybe it means what? That they ate it on Shavuos, the holiday of Shavuos. So the idach, therefore, the other authority disputes it. It says, "Kol heichot etni Pesach tni atzeres." Says whenever in the Talmud we refer to Pesach, right? Then what is the term that we always use for Shavuos? We call it atzeres. Therefore, if it says b'chag, the implication would have to be not on Shavuos, but it has to be on Sukkot, which of course is delaying quite a bit. All right. So Omar Rava, Rava said, Kevan she'avru alav gimel ha'golan. He says, okay, now he's going now to the business, not of the asay or the affirmative commandment, but going back again to what started the whole argument, namely the lo asay, right? Do not delay in fulfilling your pledge. So it says, Kevan she'avru alav gimel ha'golan, b'chol yom v'yom over b'val ta'acher. He says, when three festivals have passed, then every single day that you delay, that you haven't fulfilled it, you are violating the commandment not to delay. In other words, it isn't just, you know, when does it take effect? All right, it takes effect the day after Yontif, right? That you didn't do it. But every day after that, you are in violation, until you actually come across and, you fulfill it. Now, if you remember, we had discussed this last week, and we said, that was in connection with the Bachor, for example, where it should have been eaten by the Kohen within the year of its birth, right? But instead, it was delayed. And we said, there is a violation, but the Bechor does not become pasul for a sacrifice, you know, whenever it actually, they get around to sacrificing it and eating it. You are in violation, but, nobody's going to shmeis you for it. You know, what it means is that you are guilty of negligence, and negligence is not a very good habit to have. And the Rebbeinu Shalom is not going to be happy if you're negligent in fulfilling your pledges, you see. But nevertheless, when you finally do come across, we're not going to say that it's completely invalid and refuse to accept it. So the same thing over here with the, whatever pledges we're making at this particular point, that every single day he's guilty of Baal Ta'acher, right? He's violating this pledge, but still, no. Nusha, come on, go already to the Beis HaMikdash, fulfill your pledge, and so on, then you'll no longer be in violation.
No penalty,
right? No, there's no penalty in this particular case. You know, it's not one of these. There are, different violations for which there are penalties, okay? But I wouldn't say that there is a penalty that's involved over here. I mean, because the fact is that any time that you bring it, it still has not been made invalid as a sacrifice, as a pledge. Okay.
What to make the person?
The idea is that a person also has a conscience. Yes, has a conscience, and the conscience says, if I have an obligation to pay, I should not delay it. And every day that I fail to pay it, that my conscience is being bothered. Okay. Not as simple as it seems. I mean, at this time of the year, for example, we get bombarded, with the requests for this institution, that one, and so on and so on and so forth, all right? So, naturally, at times you don't have the time to sit down and to write a check. Doesn't mean, therefore, that, if you didn't do it today, therefore you are guilty of it. No, not exactly. But by the same token, as we learned before, that if it's a question, for example, of poor people, then what should we do? We should pay our pledges immediately, not waste time. Okay, so it's a moral issue in this particular case. Okay. Okay, Meisvei. So they asked the following question on this. It says, Echod Bechor, V'Echod Kol HaKadoshim, Kevin Shavru Aleihem Shono Belo Rigolim, or regalim b'loy shona over b'val ta'achim. Now there's a new twist that comes in at this particular point. And the new twist is based upon the fact that we said before, we've laid the stress upon how many festivals shalosh regalim, right? And then of course, we went through the whole business, does it mean Sholosh Regalim, you know, beginning with any particular one, let's say to begin with Shavuos, right? And then in that case it means Shavuos, Sukkos, and Pesach, and then you become in violation, right? Or does it mean the way most of the rabbis take it, Sidron, you know, in the order, they say they actually always have to begin with what? With Pesach. So that if, let's say, you made the pledge before Shavuos and you didn't fulfill it, you have Shavuos, Sukkos, Pesach, Shavuos, and finally that Sukkos, where if you fail to pay it by then in that particular case you're in violation, right? So this is what we've said. Okay. So here we have a new definition. This is a definition that comes from a Beraisa. In other words, one of the statements that, you know, was not made part of the official Mishnah, but represents the view of some of the teachers, okay? And what is it? It was Echad Bechor, that the law applies equally to a firstborn animal, the Echad Kol HaKadoshim, and likewise to any of the other sacrificial animals. Kaven she'ovru aleihem shona b'lo regolim, as soon as a year has passed, even if it was not a case where there were three festivals in that particular year, right? Yeah, shona b'lo regolim, or regolim, or you had three festivals below shona without it being actually a complete year. So in either case, he says, he's over the altar, right? You are violating again this law in the Torah, which says you should not delay. So the question is, Bahai Maiti Yufte, what kind of a refutation is this? In other words, how can you figure that this squares with what we said until now? Particularly what statement? Let's say that a year will go by without three festivals in it, right? Three festivals within a year is possible, but not a year without three festivals, right? I mean, this is the way it would seem. So he says, well, so what kind of refutation is this over here? So Rav Kana, said, Man dekomosiv shapikomosiv. He says, you know, the person who asked this kasha, he really is asking a good kasha. Why? Say, Michti Tana Alave Koma Hader. Listen to Bechol Yom Yom Ever Valta Acher. Okay. He says, first of all, let us learn, he says, that we're learning right now about the business of not to delay, right? So, he is talking about, you know, what violations of the negative commandments do we have involved in the delay? And so therefore, what did he say? He says, every single day you're over about to offer, right? Every day that you fail to fulfill your pledge, you are violating the law which says, you know, you must not delay in fulfilling it, right? The Yidach Tana, Lemikbe Balav Kamahadir. So, and the other one is the other Tana, the other teacher, is interested in talking about one violation, but the Lave Yisera Loi Kamahader. He is not interested actually in trying to multiply many, many, many different violations of Lave. In other words, one says, okay, three festivals, you didn't do it, you are in violation. The other one is laying the stress on, and every single day that you didn't do it, you are adding to the violations, right? So he says, the last opinion is no. We're interested only in the basic principle of do not violate, you know, your word by delaying the pledge that you made, right? And not then trying to figure out how many more violations we can figure out. Sort of like, let's say, if you ever got a ticket for parking, you know, and then the cop comes around again and he gives you another parking ticket. So right now, if it's a nice cop, what will he do? If he sees the parking ticket that has already been given, so he's not going to add, But the other cops, you know, will continue doing, you know, they keep on adding more and more and more tickets on it, right? So it's the same thing. The basic law, you have to keep your word. Don't delay longer than this period of 3 festivals, okay? That's it. You're getting a ticket for that, okay? But to start in that every single day that you're delayed, yeah, there's no question that morally this is so. But, you know, to what sheer, you know, to what end, you know, can you continue to multiply one after another? But of course, we are appealing to human beings that they should fulfill the pledge that they made, because in the final analysis, the Torah has said what? Right? That whatever comes out of your lips, right, you are to observe and do, you know, what you say you're pledging to do. So, the Rebbeinu Shleilim, you know, wants you to keep your word. Your word has to be considered holy, and it's not right for you to continue to delay day after day after day. Okay, so we have two different ideas over here, but we still didn't solve this business about the year. So this is where they come back to it. It says Gufa. All right, let's get back to what we said just a few moments ago, that Echad Bechor v'Echad Kol HaKadoshim, right? That the Bechor, the firstborn, and all the other, you know, the law not to delay fulfilling your pledge. All right, but the question is, how does it work out right now? So it says, let's see. Distracted for a moment over here, right? Yeah, Bishlamor Egon B'nai Shana, right? Okay. Says Bishlamor. Yeah, well, we said that already, right? Good for itself. Let's see, where is it? Right. So Bishlamor, this is okay in accordance with what? Regalim B'nai Shana. That it's possible to have 3 Yom Tovim. And the year hasn't passed yet. Now, obviously, I mean, between, let's say, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, it's not 12 months, okay? So that is a possibility. Ela, Shono, Belei, Regalim, but how could you have a year in which you don't have 3 festivals in it? Heichim, Mishkachas, Lo, how could you find such a thing? So he says, Honicha, this would be in accordance with Lamanda, Islei, Kisidron, Mishkachas, Lo. This would fit in with those who say that it has to be Kisidron, as we said, you know, it has to be Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, right? So in that particular case, you can have then, let's say, if it were, you started, let's say, Shavuos, right? If you started in Shavuos, then in that particular case, you would have Shavuos and Sukkot, right? That's the end of that year, and then you have again Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot. You can have then, in other words, 3 festivals without a year. It would be the other way around. You can have a year without actually having all 3 festivals within that period. This is it. Right, okay. Erlen Laman, the less like you said, but what about in the, if you agree with the Tana, you know, with the teacher who says that they do not have to be Kisidron, in other words, it doesn't have to be, but just if you have 3 festivals, you could start on Shavuos, let's say, and it would be Shavuos, Sukkot, Pesach, and at that point, you're in violation, okay? So in that particular case, Heichim is Kapsula, how could you have a year without 3 festivals in it? So Bishlamor, the Rabbi Mishkachas Lo Bishlamu Beres, he says, you can have it if you follow the opinion of Rabbi, that's Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, that it was a leap year, Shonam Uberes. Why? Because as we know, in a leap year, how many months are there? There are 13 months. And yet the question is, you know, how do you count a year? This is what it's going to revolve around right now. Yeah.
Suppose he made the commitment.
Right.
On the first day of Pesach.
Yeah.
Does the rest of Pesach count as part of one festival?
Yeah. By the end of Pesach, that's one festival.
All right. So.
Right.
Okay. Then then by the time Sukkot
then by the time Shavuos comes, you shouldn't fulfill it. If you hold, right. Remember, we had differing opinions. One said that the minute that one yantar passes, and you haven't fulfilled. Yeah. Okay, so.
Well, but if you also go for three festivals in that case, without being one year.
Yeah, there's a possibility. Yeah. David. Yeah, what we said is that in that particular case, I mean, one possibility, it says, is if you go kesidron. In other words, that it must be, you don't violate until after you've gone through the series of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, so that therefore, if you started it, let's say, prior to Shavuos or prior to Sukkot that you made a pledge, it is possible that a year could pass by and yet you don't have the three festivals the way they're supposed to be, okay? This is what he's saying, right? This is what he's saying, right? Right, there's a possibility, he says. And they're trying to figure it out, but there's a different opinion. The opinion would be that the Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, that you have to take into account sometimes if it is a Shana Mu'beres, in other words, a leap year. Beverly? If he begins Pesach what? As Pesach Sheni?
Yeah. Does he begin the count of when his obligation is due? He began Pesach as soon as it was correct?
No. If he made his pledge before Pesach, then in that particular case, Pesach Sheni doesn't enter into the calculation. Pesach Sheni is primarily, it's a makeup date in case he was unable to bring the Korban Pesach on the correct time. Okay? But it doesn't count as a festival. Gemara in Pesachim speaks about what is the nature of Pesach Sheni. And it points out that Pesach Sheni is different. The law in the Torah says that, the korban has to be eaten on that day by a person who failed to bring it on Pesach and has to eat it al matzah simrorim, right? He has to eat it together with matzah and bitter herbs. But the Gemara points out very clearly that, nevertheless, chametz could be everywhere else. Just for that particular action, he has to observe the Korban Pesach. But the rest of the time, he could be eating chametz, let's say the following morning, eating chametz, you understand? It's not the same. It's just like a makeup night, and that's all there is. It only applies to that night, okay? So that wouldn't have the force of being a regal. You see, it's not a festival day. All right. Now, getting back over here to our text, all right, so as we see, Rebbe proposes that maybe it would be a Shana Mu'beres, a leap year, the Tanya, as we have learned. And here is the teaching that proves it, according to him. Torah says, Shana Tamima, a whole year, a perfect year. Now the question is, first of all, what is the background of this? The answer is that there is a law in the Torah, Parsha Behar, which deals with the question of if you sell real estate, okay? Now, in most cases, once you've sold it, you have a right of redemption. But the question is, how long do you have a right of redemption? In some cases, it could be an extended right of redemption. In some cases, it's farfallen. But here we're talking about a house which is sold in an ir chama, in other words, within a city which has a wall around it. Because if it's not, if there's no war, then the Torah says, no wall around it, then the Torah says that in that case, even if it's a city, but it's considered as if it were a process. In other words, like fields or something like that, where it would be subject to that particular limitation. Okay. So, in connection with the house that has been sold in a walled city, it says that the person who sells it has shana tamimah, right, a whole year in order to redeem this house. He can repurchase it again from the person to whom he did it, and he has that right to repurchase it. Okay. But if a year passes, then in that case, it's farfallen. That house is sold permanently to the person to whom he sold it, and he has no right of redemption in that case. Okay? So, shanotamimo. All right? A whole year. So, how do you define it? So, Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says, Mona Gimel Meos, in other words, Shlosh Meos, V'shishim V'chamisha Yom, right? 365 days. Kiminyan Yemos Echama, which is the count of the solar year. Okay? How many days are on the solar year? Of course, we're not talking, right? Not talking about, you know, whether it's a quarter of a day afterwards or something like that, you know. But it's easier to figure that the year has how many? 365 days. If we would ask anybody, you know, how many days are there in the year, what would the answer be? 365 is the normal answer. So Rabbi says, this is it. In order to determine what do we mean by the Shana Tamimo, we don't go on the basis of the Jewish calendar for a moment, right? But we go instead on the basis of the solar calendar. Because with the Jewish calendar, we know the average year, that is at least 2 years out of three is a normal rule, has not 365 days, but roughly about 354 or something like that. Roughly, about 354, 355. I mean, there might be a slight variation. And that's the reason why we have, yeah, that's why we have to have, you know, Shanomu Beres, we have to have a leap year, because to make up for the difference between the lunar year and the solar year. So therefore, Rebbe says in this particular case, we're talking not about the lunar year, which would be less, but it refers to the solar year, right? The 365 days. All right, that being the case, so, okay, yeah. But the sages say, no, Mona Yud Beis Chodesh Miyom Liyom. Okay, you count 12 months from day to day. Now, obviously, over here, they don't mean according to the solar calendar, but they mean what? According to the lunar calendar, right? That if, let's say, you bought a house, you know, let's say on the 30th of Av, then a year that passes will be the 30th of Av in the following year, okay? So, which happens to be tonight's day, okay? Yeah. And they say, V'im nisar roshono, and if the year happens to be, becomes, you know, a leap year, then nisar v'lo. Okay. So in that case, it's a leap year. Okay. Which would mean, in other words, that there's quite a difference of opinion between them, because according to Rebbe, it's 365 days. That's a year. Okay. So that in that particular case, it is possible to have a year without three festivals in it. Maybe. It all depends when the festivals start, okay? That's according to him. Right. Yeah. Because in an ordinary year, it would have been 350 days, okay? Which had three regalim in it. But if you already extend it to 365, I would think so too, but I don't know.
It's just,
pardon me? Right.
365 days,
you get
two other.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's true. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, that's correct. That's exactly what he's arguing. Yeah. Okay. And they say, you know, that doesn't work out that way. It's a nibiyot, it's a nibiyot. All right. So he says, Mashkachas lo le Rabbi, we can find that it works out according to Rabbi, the ikdisho boso chaga abatzas. Exactly what you said. If he, you know, he made his vow that he was going to bring an animal, so korban, right, after Pesach was over. Dechi moto shilhe ador basro, okay, because then, when the end of second Adar came, so Shana Malya, right? And then in that case, a year has passed, but Regalim Leimolo, but you don't have the three festivals as yet. Elul Rabbonon? Yeah, well, we'll have to ask Rebbe. No. Again, what is he saying? He's saying after Pesach you made a vow, okay?
After Pesach.
After Pesach,
so
right. So it would start with Shavuos. All right, so we have Shavuos, Sukkot, right? And no, because a year has passed. Right, a year has passed. Let's say he made it on the 17th of Nisan, okay? All right. When the 17th of Nisan comes the following year in an Iber year, right, it's much more than 365 days. So that's why he says, you know, that it is possible to have, you know, a year and yet you didn't have the three festivals because of the extra month, you know, that's been thrown in over there. Now that's Rabbi's argument, okay?
That you don't know until the festivus, right? It's going to be an Iber.
Yeah, that's true.
Erev,
yeah, right. Yeah, right, that's correct. Yeah, because it's only on the last day of Adar that the official decision is made. That's correct. Although they can make anticipatory decisions.
But the actual
decision. Right. But the actual one has to be the last day of the month of Adar. Correct. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some places say Kapur Rosh only Rosh Chodesh Adar Rosh
Right, Ella Rabbanim. But if you go with the rabbis who said, you know, that you simply count, you know, from day to day, year to year, right? How do you find it? How could it work out? So he says, Kedetani Rav Shmaya. As Rav Shmaya taught the following, he said, Atzeres Shavuos, he says, the Omim Hei, the Omim Shisha, the Omim Shiva. Meaning that the Shavuos festival sometimes could be on the fifth day of Sivan, sometimes on the sixth day of Sivan, and sometimes on the seventh day of Sivan. Now, of course, I have to tell you, we never have it that way. It's always on the sixth of Sivan. But he was, first of all, he based it on the fact that it could be, you know, that the Beis Din, looking at the moon, decided, you know, that either to make to add a 30th day to the month, or they decided not to add a 30th day to the month. And of course we're talking specifically about the months of at the end of Nisan, right, and the end of Iyar. You know, are we going to have 30 days or 29 days in those months? So if we have, as he explains over here, okay, okay, so he says, how does it work out? He says Shinei and Malayin, let's say both, the end of Nisan and the end of Iyar were full. In other words, each of them had 30 days. Then Shavuos, because you know you have to begin counting with the second day of Pesach. So what would be the date of Shavuos? It would be Chamisha. It would be the fifth day, okay, of Sivan. Shnei and Chaserin. What would happen if each month only had 29 days? Then in that case, it would be Shiva. It would be on the seventh day of Sivan. Echad Molei v'Echad Choser. If one of the months had 30 days and the other one had 29, then in that case, it's going to work out Shisha. It's going to be on the sixth day of Sivan. Needless to say, we have our calendar fixed. So in a fixed calendar, we know that Nisan always contains 30 days, right? And Iyar always contains 29 days. So that therefore the date of Shavuos is always on the sixth day of Sivan. Now I do have to tell you there is a machlokes in the Talmud, however, as to whether Shavuos should be on the sixth of Sivan or on the seventh of Sivan. There is that machlokes, depending upon how you count the days of preparation and when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Mount Sinai and so on. But the prevailing view, as we said, is always that it's Shisha, right? And Gemara in Avodah Zorah, for example, points out, we say Vayera Vayivoker, right? Yom HaShishi. Why does it say Yom HaShishi? Because it's National Shabbos, but it says Yom HaShishi indicates that this is in connection with the fact that Shavuos would be on the sixth day of Sivan, and that would be the day for the people of Israel to receive the Torah. Okay, so
the counting of the Omer in terms of
Pesach, right, correct.
So do you run into a problem there?
Yes. You run into a different problem. Problem is the wording that you have in connection with the counting of the yomer. Torah says, "Usfartem lochem," you are to count the mocharas haShabbos on the morrow and the day. In other words, following the Shabbos. So the question is, how do we understand that? We interpret that meaning that Shabbos here refers to the first day of Pesach. It's a Shabbos in the sense, you know, it's a day in which you don't do any labor or something like that, you see, okay? So that, therefore, this is the Shabbos. On the other hand, you had Shomronim, for example, the Samaritans, and some other sectarians, who said, you know, that you counted from the first Shabbos within Pesach week. So, if that's the case, then you'll always have a, you know, a difference between one and the other. Unless Pesach actually happens to be on Shabbos, then in that case the two dates would coincide, but otherwise there would always be a difference. But you know, look, we have to go according to the tradition of our sages and of our people, and you know, that's what determines it, you see. So
Pesach observed in the desert?
Was it observed in the desert? The Torah mentions that in the second year after they left Egypt it was observed, right? That Pesach was observed, right? But that's the only time, exactly. And then we find in the first chapter of the book of Yehoshua that the people of Israel, and not first, it's in the first chapters, okay, that the people of Israel did not observe Pesach during the 40 years that they were there in the wilderness, nor did they circumcise any of the children who were born at that, okay. So that therefore when they came to Eretz Yisrael, one of the first actions was to circumcise the children and to observe Pesach. Okay. And of course they had the new produce of the land of Eretz Yisrael in order to make the matzahs that they observed.
But they hadn't circumcised because the answer of the Torah can't
eat. That is absolutely right. The word in the Torah that says, we're called Orel Leyochalbo, that whoever is uncircumcised is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. Right. So during all that time they didn't observe it, except for the second year, because in the second year you still had the people who had left Egypt and they were circumcised. In Egypt they practiced circumcision, but you know, in the wilderness, because they felt the danger, exposure, who knows what, or something like that, so they didn't do it. So, yeah. Okay, getting back over here. Yeah, all right. It says the man Tana de Fali Galay the Rav Shmaya, right? And who is the teacher who disagreed with this last statement of Rav Shmaya? He says Achirim. It's the Achirim. Now Achirim, I have to tell you, literally it means the others. Now what does it mean, the others? The answer is that there was, again, there's a machlokes between Rabbi Meir. Right. So what happened? So they gave him the motion because Rabbi Meir wanted to be the head of the Rosh Hashiva, and the Rosh Hashiva wanted to be the Rosh Hashiva. So poor Rabbi Meir, his punishment was that very often they wouldn't cite him by name, but they would simply say Acher. Others say his father. Okay. So probably it's Rabbi Meir who they're referring to over here. Doesn't always work out that way, but very often this is the idea. Okay. And what did he say? He says, "Ein bein atzeres la'atzeres, ein bein Rosh Hashanah Rosh Hashanah eladad yom b'vadim ha'isoshan mu'beres chamisha." He says that between one Shavuos and another Shavuos, in other words, the two of them, you cannot have more than a difference of 4 days. Okay, the same thing he says between Rosh Hashanah and another Rosh Hashanah. It wouldn't be more than, of course, I'm talking about 4 days in the week, okay? All right? So that, let's say, if Rosh Hashanah would be on Shabbos, then the following Rosh Hashanah would work out to be on Thursday, although it's not necessarily so, because you can have two in a row the same day, okay?
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, all right, okay. And let's do it the other way around. Okay, let's say that Rosh Hashanah is on Thursday. Okay, so when would be the next Rosh Hashanah? Yeah, okay, so it would be Monday. Okay, all right. Anyway, it's not an inviolate rule, but nevertheless, it works out. Because it is possible to have the same Yontif
twice
on the same day, right?
Yeah, it's very frequent.
Right, that happens.
I think next
no question.
Year is going to be the same as this year.
Yeah, yeah. It's correct. Rosh Hashanah will be on Shabbos and Sunday 2 years in a row. Right.
Usually after Nibiru.
Right. Yeah. So in the Nibiru, he says there will be a 5 day difference in the week. Okay. So this is an observation. Okay. Boy, Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira asks a new question. Says, Yoresh Mahu Bival Ta'achim. Says, if a person inherits from his father, father made a vow, right? And then he passed away before he was able to fulfill his vow. He has a son who inherits the estate. What is the obligation of the son? Is it to fulfill his father's vow? And in that case, if it is, so how much time does he have? See, this is the question that he's asking right now. For example, he says, right. What is it in relation to, you know, the violation of the commandment, you know, not to delay? He says, Torah says, kisidah neder, right? When you make a vow, Omer Rachmona, the Torah said, the holo nodar, but yet he is not the one who made the vow, right? O Dilma, or perhaps there's a different consideration. It's written, uvaso shomo. Right, you have to come to the Beis HaMikdash, you have to bring there everything that you pledged, right? The Ha Mechayev. And then in that case, since he has inherited from his father, therefore he should be obligated to bring whatever his father had pledged, because now it was his obligation. Okay? So Toshma. So they say, okay, let's work this one out. The Toni Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Chiya said, Mei Imoch Prat Li Yoresh. Okay, Torah says, you know, that you are to bring mei imach from that which belongs to you, right? So therefore, he says, from that which belongs to you, he says, prat, that would exclude the yoresh, that would exclude the person who inherits. In other words, he doesn't have the obligation of doing it. That's what it would seem, right? So they raise another exception. They say, we gave another interpretation a couple of pages back that the word miyamach is used in order to refer to those things that affect a person that he has to give of his own. Namely, we said before that that is the leket shichor peah. Right? In other words, that refers to leket shichor peah. If that's the case, then how do you say that mei imoch means that it's properly yoresh, excludes the yoresh? In other words, you're giving a different interpretation of the same pasuk. So the Gemara says, yeah, kari bei imoch, kari bei mei imoch. Yes, it could work out, right, that both of these interpretations are the right. But how? The word says mei imoch, granted. But it also, what's part of the word mei imoch? Imoch. It's interesting to see how they do it right. Okay. Imoch, what's with you, right? Okay, so that would be like a chikon peah, right? Okay, whereas mei imoch, that means that would exclude the person who inherits from his father and has the obligation. All right. And anyway, I do want to tell you that a good son will do what?
Moderate.
He will moderate his parents, right, by bringing his obligations, exactly, right. Boy, Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira asks another kasha. Says, Isha, Mahi Bival Tacher, does the law of not to delay fulfilling a pledge, right, apply to a woman? Miyam Rinan, do we say that? Should we say Ho lo mechayve b'ra'iya, O dilma ho isa b'simcha? He says, the reason why I asked the question, he says, is as follows. We know that the law of the Shalosh Regalim, you know, going up to Yerushalayim in order to celebrate the Beis HaMikdash, is required of Jewish males. Of course, it's written in the Torah, what Yeroveh called Zechurcha. And Zechurcha means all your males, okay? So they have an obligation to go to the Beis HaMikdash, to make the pilgrimage and so on. The question is, do the women have the same obligation? So the answer is, no, technically, they do not have that obligation, okay? But nevertheless, there is an obligation. And that is the obligation that a yontiv is there for what?
Simcha.
For simcha, for rejoicing. Okay? So in that case, women are also required to rejoice in the festival. So if they are required to rejoice in the festival, then should they be subject also to the business of three festivals in order to fulfill whatever pledge they have made? A woman can make a pledge, you know. She can pledge too. She can pledge charity, she can to give a sacrifice, and so on and so forth. So would she have the same amount of time? The answer is, of course, yes, based upon this interpretation. Okay? If we take the other one, then we would say there's no time limit as far as when a woman has to fulfill her pledge. Because if we tie it in only to the idea of, you know, that it's only the males who have this obligation, then in that case a woman has extended time until she finally gets around to it. So it's a question, okay? So Amalei Abaye. So Abaye said to him, he says, specifically, the Isa Besimcha, says, you're learning, you know, that she is required, you know, to rejoice, right? So that therefore the implication is, since she's required to rejoice on the festival, then in that case she should also be subject to the rule of Shalosh Regalim, right? As far as, you know, fulfilling a pledge. So now the Gemara says, but did Abaye really say that? The Omar Abaye, didn't Abaye say in a different context, he says, Isha Abaye Misamcha, that the simcha of a woman is not incumbent upon her, but it's incumbent upon her husband. He has the obligation to make her happy during the festival. How? Well, first of all, by having her come and share the festive meal, there's no question that she's enjoying the simcha, right? But also, Gemara says in another place that how does he make her happy? The answer is he buys her nice clothing, he gets her jewelry, he gets her good wines and things like that, and so on, to make her very happy, so that she should feel, you know, very, very happy. So that the obligation, in other words, is that it's the husband who has the obligation of making her happy. So that therefore, in that case, we would say that Abaye then is of the opinion that the woman does not have the obligation that she has to fulfill her neder within three festivals, right? So, that contradicts exactly what Abaye said just a moment ago to Rav Zera, right? So, the answer is, the Dvora of the Rabbi Zera Ka'omar. The answer is that he was answering Rabbi Zera according to Rabbi Zera's opinion, but not according to his own opinion. Okay. Yeah, I think that this would be a good place where to stop right now. So let's all have a simcha and enjoy Yom Tovim. It is now Rosh Chodesh Elul. Of course, tonight is actually technically the 30th day of the month of Av. And then, of course, tomorrow night begins the first day of Elul, technically, right? But we can already sense the Yom Tovim coming. And let us hope that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will grant to all of us a good Gebench Dior, and we should be happy. Fulfill our pledges and rejoice on the festivals all day. Okay, tonight is already the 25th of the month of August, right? And of course, actually, tonight is Yud Dalet in Elul. It's hard to realize that. Before I forget, next week is the Eisenstein lecture.
Right.
Wednesday night.
Right.
So we're going to have to miss that one again. There you go. Yeah.
No, we're going to get started with this one.
Huh?
We missed the lecture and have
a... Well. the rabbi is trying to grab everybody from the street to come in, you know. I can understand that. He has a big man, you know, from the head of the Hillel or something or other. So that obviously.
The rock star, like, right. Concert, Billy Joel, right?
Oh, is that who it is? Mela, I'm more familiar with the Philharmonic Orchestra. Okay. All right. Anyway, we are now at the bottom of Rosh Hashanah, Daf Vav, Amid Beis, and we're right down to the third line from the bottom. Okay. New question. We're concerned about how much time, right? And we saw, for example, you know, that as far as a vow, a pledge, or something that you make, so the accepted opinion, although, as we saw, there were differences of opinion, but the accepted opinion was that you have three festive occasions, you know, that if by the end of that time you don't, then in that particular case, then you are guilty of Bal Ta'achir that, you know, have neglected to fulfill your pledge, okay? We saw there were other opinions. One said only one. That was Rabbi Meir's opinion. We had another opinion that said two, right? Another one extended it from three, if it has to be Kisidron, so, and it has to be there for Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, so if, let's say, it's before Shavuot, it would be five holidays. If it's before Sukkot, it would be four. I mean, so we have these differences of opinion. But nevertheless, what we've been discussing is how much time you have for the fulfillment of that, okay? So now we come to another thing. The question is about a bechor. Bechor, in this case, means, of course, a firstborn animal, either a calf, or, you know, the firstborn of a sheep or a goat, okay? So the question is, that we know, it has to be given to whom? To the Kohen. Okay. All right, so the Gemara now asks the following question. It says, Bechor, be'emosai monin lo shono. In the case of a Bechor, such an animal, how do we reckon 1 year? Because if you remember, we had in the Torah, we read in Parsha Rei, it's written over there, Kol HaBechor, Asher Yevoli Bechor, Chutzen HaZochor, right? Any male, firstborn animal to be born, you know, to your sheep or your cattle or something, right? Takdish to Hashem Lekecha, you have to dedicate that, and so on and so forth. And then if they have Hashem Lekecha, so if they have Shana B'Shana. That's what it says. Before the Lord your God, you shall eat it year by year. Therefore, what is the implication? That it should be eaten within its own year. All right, so the question is, so how do you count the year, right? Actually, the question is over here, not how do you count the year, but when do you start counting a year for the animal? We see the reason why the question is asked. Omar, all right, Abaye Omar, Abaye says that it's Mishor Shenolat. All right. Abaye says that it's from the moment that the animal is born, that's when you begin counting the year. So let's say the animal was born on the 14th of Elul, tonight's date, right? Then in that particular case, you'd have until the following Yud Dalet, you know, Elul, in order for the Kohen to either sacrifice it and eat it, or eat it. What do I mean by that? So we'll see in the second what I mean, okay? Rabbi Yaakov Amar, he said, no, the year for the animal starts at a different moment. He says, Mishor she nireh lahartzo'ot. He says, it begins with the moment when the animal, if sacrificed, will be l'ratzon. In other words, God will be happy or will be willing to accept it. Now, what is that dependent upon? So, it's dependent upon something that we have in Parsha Evar, okay? There it's written that an animal, shor or kesev or eis ki yevolit. So this is what it says, right? If an ox, right? Or a sheep, or a goat is born, right? Voyo shivas yomim tachas imoy. Then for 7 days it has to be nursing from its mother. But beginning on the 8th day, and from that time on, Yerotze, the Korban Isha L'Hashem. then it can be accepted as a sacrifice unto the Lord. That's what the pasuk says. Okay? So, in other words, at what particular point should we begin counting? According to Rabbi Acha ben Yaakov, we should begin counting on the eighth day of its existence. Okay? So now the Gemara tries to settle the dispute between these two.
Whatever the determined cycle is, three festivals, begin counting the three festivals?
No.
No, this is a different problem right now. Yes, a different problem. Although, to a certain extent, I mean, if a person failed to bring it, then the question is, he would also be guilty of balta acher, you know, if he let it go too long. But we assume right now that the person gave the animal, you know, to the Kohen at some time or other within the first year of its existence, right? And that the Kohen then had the obligation either to sacrifice it and eat it, right? Or he had the obligation, if there was a blemish, and this is what we'll see in a second, that if the animal had a blemish in it, then in that particular case, it could be slaughtered and eaten, but still has to be eaten by a Kohen. It can't be eaten by, you know, the person who gives the animal to the Bechor, to the Kohen. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, that's true.
From a practical point of view, why waste?
Yeah, you're right, because I didn't quote the next pasuk, which says, Lo sa'avod b'chor tzonecha, lo sa'goz b'chor tzonecha, lo sa'avod b'chor b'chor tzonecha. Okay, what it says is that you cannot use this b'chor either for work purposes. You know, because after all, you know, very often, you know, people use an ox, let's say, for plowing or something like that, or in the case of a sheep, which is no good for that, but you're not allowed either to shear it and use the wool, because that's also making a profane use of it, okay? So these are prohibited. So the animal has to be given to the Kohen. But again, you know, people have a tendency that they put it off, and for a good reason, too. The animal, you know, you let it grow a little bit, there's more meat available, obviously. There's more to eat, right? Whereas if you bring, you know, an animal that's just been born, I don't have to tell you, there isn't very much in that animal right now. I mean,
but it also
we can
has
figure
to do
out.
With when they could get to Jerusalem to deliver it.
Yeah,
that
okay.
Time, there's a time element there.
Yeah, right, you're absolutely right.
No,
there is.
I mean, that could depend upon when,
yeah,
when could
yeah,
they get
that's
there.
Right. So therefore, the idea would be to bring it to the very first festival rather than to put it off, right? To bring it itself, right? Yeah.
There's a difference. A calf or something could be born in the end of October.
Yeah.
The first available festival is only in Pesach, so it's almost
right.
6 months off.
Okay.
Where the calf could also be born in February and still be eligible.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But on the other hand, too, you don't really have to wait necessarily only for the festival in order to bring it. I mean, you could give it to the Kohen prior to that and let the Kohen worry about it. Okay?
Right.
Yeah.
So, ignorance of animal husbandry.
Yeah.
And we're talking now about a male animal.
A male animal, right. Because it says hazachor, right, if it's
so
male.
What happens is it's the same as in terms of the human law, that if that animal had a female...
No, if the animal were a female, the firstborn
animal...
The firstborn
animal is a female.
Then in that
then
case,
there's
no law.
There's no,
right,
that
doesn't
apply.
Doesn't apply,
to
right.
In
right.
the same way.
Yeah,
right.
Like, for example, you take the law about pidyon aben, which
I
applies
to
human
to.
Beings,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So in the pidyon aben, again, I mean, if the first born child is a girl, then that's it. And then any boys that are born after that, you know, there's no obligation for pidyon aben. It doesn't exist, okay? Because there are other circumstances, too, wherein we excuse a family from pidyon aben, where the mother or the father is either a Kohen or a Levi. And as I say, it applies to the mother as well. If she's the daughter of a Kohen, the daughter of a Levi, then automatically there is no pidyon aben. If, let's say, the baby were born through a cesarean section, then you don't have a pidyon aben either. So, because then we say that it wasn't born, you know, in the normal way. Okay. All right, getting back over here. All right, so when does it begin? So we see already that there is a difference of opinion. One says from the moment that it was born, And the other one says when it became acceptable, which would mean on the eighth day from that point on. Right. And now the Gemara says, well, Opliga says not, that they don't really differ in their point of view. Why? Last two words on the page, and then we switch to the next page. Ha betam, ha bevalmo. Okay? The difference is whether the animal is tam, which means free from any blemish whatever, right? Whereas hobevalmun means that the animal has a blemish of some sort, and of course we're not talking now about a temporary blemish, we're talking about that right from birth the animal already has a blemish. Of course, you know, animals can develop blemishes even after birth. I mean, they go out in the field and who knows, maybe they cut themselves, they bleed, who knows, you know, different things that don't. Besides the fact, I mean, that also the Torah has some physical disabilities as far as animals are concerned. The animal is blind, for example, or if the animal has a broken leg or something like that, you know, these are also disqualifications because the animal has to be tam or tamim, which is the other one. It has to be in the perfect state, right? Otherwise, it cannot. So, they say, one case we're talking about tam, in other words, the animal is in excellent condition, and the other one, balmum. So, first of all, they ask the following question. It says, balmum mimotzi ochilei. How can you eat a balmum? Well, first of all, let's understand what the answers in the tam or balmum. In other words, what they're saying over there is that if the animal is tam, in other words, it's perfect from birth, so that then what becomes eligible as a korban, right? That the priest then has to bring it as a korban and then he eats it after, you know, he does what you do with a dollar. You know, you have to sprinkle the blood and certain parts are, you know, burnt on the altar, whatever it may be, and the rest of the animal he eats, okay? So, in that case, when would it then become eligible? So we said on the eighth day. Okay? So that would be the second opinion, the one of Rabbi Acha ben Yaakov. Okay? Whereas, in the case of, you know, if it were a baal mum, in other words, an animal which already was born with a blemish, so what can be done with that animal? The answer is that the kohen simply has it, you know, he shechts it whenever he gets around to it, and he eats it as regular food, as a regular meal. Okay. Pardon me?
We have to eat it within that year of time.
Yeah, it should be eaten within the year.
Where
right.
But where does it count the year from?
Then in that case, from the day that the animal was born. Okay,
but
that's what they say. Yeah.
But doesn't a blemish make an animal not kosher?
All depends what the blemish
is.
Right. Okay?
So this
and
has
other,
got to be something
right.
visible.
Of course, it would be something external.
External,
as I said.
Not,
right.
not in the
order. Not something internal.
Right,
right. Okay. Because if it were internal, there's no question, it would
yeah.
be, then
yeah.
it probably would be trade.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. No, but, you know, after they...
After they